around the body is the length of the antenna, actually, to the human body. It's very interesting. People should look that up. And it's an FCC item. It's not licensed, actually. It should be. But it has a whole statement written up about it. Now, I wanted to make one comment about the television before, but I went into the black hole. And I have a 120-inch home theater screen. Resolution makes a big difference when you sit 20 feet away. Makes a big difference. That's all I wanted to say earlier tonight, but I couldn't get in because of the quick keying. I just wanted to say, it doesn't hurt my feelings. I just wanted you to take notice that some people probably can't get in on Echolink and get upset. But the resolution does make a difference when you sit 20 feet away from a large screen. And they go for the best resolution possible. The home theaters, like where I live, there is no movie theater, so you have to create your own. Back to Roy.
So, Ken, is your 120-inch a projection TV or some other technology?
It is projection. It is beautiful. It is warm. And it has a 9.1 surround system, so it just envelops us. Back to you.
Okay, very good. Well, what resolution is that?
Depending on what I feed it with. So it depends what kind of, you know, I don't even watch streaming. I go with the disc, you know, whatever, you know, you have to use DVDs because any of the streaming services, depending on what you're going to watch, they vary. So I use DVDs. But the highest resolution I can get.
Okay. It's just, I mean, display devices have a best-case resolution. They can upscale lower resolution software to fill it up. But, you know, it has a certain number of pixels wide and pixels deep. So I would assume it's more like a 2K projector. I could be wrong.
Right, and the way, exactly, and the way I noticed it was when I used older DVDs and I looked at it, and this is garbage, total garbage. And then when I use a more upscale resolution, it's superior, way superior. And all the old garbage goes out. And you have to buy all the new stuff. And everything I had in the past might as well be thrown in the garbage. It's so good. Total no good. It's garbage. So it's, you know, and this stuff is 5-6 years old. So, you know, anything from the past 10 or 15 years ago is ridiculous to look at on the screen, you know, because it looks like smears, you know. So that's the way it goes. Everything has to be, anything, once you start stretching it out, it amplifies the garbage. And that was my comment I made before, but I went into the black hole before I could make it. Back to you.
AC2GS. Well, that's capitalism. Look, I've been on that ride myself. I had the entire collection of Star Trek in VHS tapes, which I threw out and replaced with laser discs, which I threw out and replaced with DVDs. So, and at that point, I just gave up. And like I said, unfortunately, you know, my vision is not quite as good as it once was, and I could watch I think it's a 42-inch diagonal flat screen 7 feet away, 720p, and it looks to me as good as any high definition on my you know, relatively early LCD flat screen. So I sound like you got a great system. I'm sure you enjoy it. Those things are beautiful, especially you put them together right with some nice surround and a couple of extra sub bases to just shake you when things blow up, and it's a beautiful thing.
All right, I won't delay belabor it, but I'll take this as my last comment on that and hand it back to the go-around before I go into another black hole. The whole thing is, you know, it's content you watch also, depending upon what you watch, I've gathered. Cable TV out here and satellite is worthless, just about. So I decided to cut the cord and go streaming services. Thousands of channels, absolutely free unless you want to buy a la carte. And I have various 65-inch quality televisions throughout the house. My children watch it more than I do. And they don't even watch that as much as I thought they would have. But when they want to watch their content, they have access to pull up whatever they want over the streaming services on the various televisions. And that's just how it is. It's not the focal point of our life, but when they have it, they have quality, you know, on the 65-inch TVs that are hanging on the walls in various places. So it's okay nowadays. It's not like it used to be, but it's okay. It's like a window to the world, and that's all I have to say about that. You know, we're not strapped to a bill for various TVs. We just pay a $65 charge for the internet, and that's 5 TVs in my house, you know. So that's my comment. And about the electrical surgical unit, I guess most people don't know that because they're unconscious. When they're brought into a surgical suite, and they're being operated on by a radio knife. All right, 73 for now, and I'll just listen out. This is N2BHD Mobile on Highway 2 in Nebraska. Back to you, Royce.
Okay, 73, Ken. Always a pleasure, and I hope they're asleep. They're supposed to be asleep. Every so often when the anesthesiologist screws up, they're not asleep. But it really ultimately now it depends upon the effectiveness of compression algorithms, because companies don't want to pay the bitstream prices to push all of those high-resolution bits. So they use newer, better compression algorithms, look much better, and compress the images more than they did in the past. So that's another kind of hidden aspect of modern technology improving life. So thanks as always for participating on the 10-meter net and on this, the technical net. Stay safe, be well, and we'll talk to you down the line, Ken.
I regret. One last comment. I also calibrate the defibrillators, both in the hospital, on the crash cart, and in the ambulances. I do about 30 of them locally here in the Indian hospital. And you're right about the jewel. And then they pace. They throw the pace on the heart. Edgeworth pacer. You're correct. Out here they don't attach the paddle to the ones on the crash carts. If you notice, if you go in a hospital, I'm pretty sure you won't see paddles hooked up. They keep them blocked up because they don't want anybody joking around with them. So to get the paddles out, you got to unlock the crash cart to get them out. But out here, at least that's what they do. But yeah, you're right. It's measured. When we calibrate the joule. And that is exactly correct. I'm responsible for reservation called Pine Ridge. It's the size, you're gonna laugh, it's the size of Connecticut, and they have 8 ambulances. That's that. They have Dole and Medtronic. That's the equipment they use, one of the defibrillators. And they use Joule as the measurement. And that is my final comment, and I'll listen out. This is N2BHD Mobile.
Okay, very good, Ken. Yeah, I was on the other end of those paddles more than a few times during my internship and my residency. We had a set of paddles at work in my practice. Thankfully, you use them far less in a practice than you do in a hospital. There are guys who walk around with code pages in hospitals. It's such a frequent thing to do. Anyway, once again, great talking to you, Ken, as always. Hopefully, you'll be back next week for both the 10-meter net, the tech net. So I'll talk to you then. So Jim, you were still on the list. Do you want to do your thing tonight, or you want to push it forward to next week?
I think I could go with it.
Okay.
So this links to the TechNet, the ComputerNet, the SpaceNet, current events, and just our overall curiosity of things technical. Hits them all, I think. Really interesting development this week, and I know it's from somebody that you're not a big fan of, whatever kind of a cuckoo-y bird he may or may not be. Apparently, Starlink has now launched 8 satellites that are linking, if I understand this correctly, I'm open to somebody explaining it differently. Linking the StarNet, Starlink, to phones, like regular phones, like 4G LTE phones, like in mass, like the whole damn world. Very interesting development. I think it's a world-changing development. Now, you know, perhaps somebody could blow it off and say, hey, he's not really going to do that, but apparently they've done test messages. It's up and running to some extent, and they're going to expand the capacity. But I believe it's called D2D and D2C, direct to cellular. So your regular phone that we've all got in our pocket will be able to text, like, in the very near future, if not now, and then they'll develop it further into being able to do, you know, data and whatnot. And basically makes the whole idea of a cell tower obsolete, completely obsolete. Or there's a dual redundant system. There's a ground-based system and a space-based system. Very interesting development. I'm very curious what some of the folks on this net think about that. Back to you, Roy.
Okay. I'm more than happy to hear other people's opinion. You know mine of good old Elon. I think one of the glaring problems is coverage. The big problem with Starlink in the first place is it has somewhat spotty coverage. And in Elon's favorite little dreams, you wouldn't be able to see the stars out in the sky because there'd be so many Starlink satellites covering the surface of the orbit that they live in. So my guess is that you wouldn't want to depend on that type of ability, communications asset, because it would be incredibly spotty unless trillions of dollars in satellites were launched all over the world, and you'd have to find another job for our astronomers. But I'm more than willing to hear other people's somewhat more optimistic, maybe, take on this. So if you got an idea, if you got a thought, hit that push to talk. Okay, I think I heard Paul in addition, but we'll go with Ed first, and then hopefully if it was Paul, we'll go to Paul.
I'm kind of spitballing here. Let's see what the other person wants.
Paul, I think that was you.
I have it. This is WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
Okay, very good. Well, Starlink's over 5,000 satellites now. These newer ones that they've been putting up for the last year, they used to put up 52 satellites at a time. Now they're putting up like 20, roughly 22, 23 satellites at a time. So they're bigger. But these new ones that they're putting up apparently have the capability of copying the frequencies that you would use for cell phones. So, yes, Jim's right. They run some tests already with the first two satellites that have that capability. and it did work. When I say what they're doing is the text, they're sending text messages. They think eventually email and actual telephone calls could take place within a year or so. But for now, it's just going to be text. There's other companies that are also planning to do the same thing. There's one particular company that's all they plan on doing is just copying their cell phones if they could ever get their satellites up. So, it's inevitable. But like Roy said, coverage is going to be tough for the, if I'm in my house or my basement, I'm not going to be able to use my cell phone to get to that satellite, most likely. If you're out in the backyard, probably no problem. So this is really going to be good for rural areas that have poor normal cellular coverage. So that's what he's going to. That's what you're going to tap into: islands, thousands of islands, and that don't have the proper coverage. Indonesia, so countless islands and places like that. It's gonna be very good for that purpose. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, Ed, what did you want to say?
Actually, what Paul said was great. Let me get this straight, Paul. You're talking about the low Earth orbit satellites, and we're basically posting texting. A, any idea of their altitude? And B, can you confirm that at this point in time we're talking really texting rather than, higher data stuff?
Yeah, they said the higher data stuff and actual voice communications will probably be within a year or so. That's Elon's prediction. maybe it'll be longer than that. He lives in a different time warp than most of us. But yeah, they've got the text one working. They've run a couple of tests with that. Nobody's officially signed up and paying for this yet. They need more satellites that have that capability. And the altitudes are roughly 300 miles, 350, something like that. 100 miles or so above the International Space Station. Back to you, Ed.
Thank you, Paul. That's actually very informative, I want to say. Here's the thing, Roy. If you have, we're talking about a satellite 350 miles away. We're talking about two-directional information transfer without any kind of antenna directionality, really. You really can't point the dish at a satellite that goes across the sky without all kinds of complicated stuff. So you're talking about very, very low signal levels. And the theoretical noise floor, good old, KTV, -174 dBm per hertz, applies. And let me give you a relative analogy. GPS, we're talking the same kind of thing. You ever wonder why it takes you so long to acquire the satellite? It's because you have to narrow the bandwidth down. You have to have an incredibly narrow bandwidth in order to cut through that noise floor. And what they're doing with GPS is they're using spread spectrum technology to allow you to actually have a functional bandwidth on the order of like 1 hertz to lock on to the carriers. And that's what takes so long, because it's a whole process of cut, try, and hone and refine. And the same thing would apply. Now, the beauty is, if you're talking about text, texting is the lowest data rate mode you can get on a cell phone, because voice or data require much, much higher bandwidth. And there's no way you can fit that in, no matter how much spread spectrum you use, within the noise floor limitations. Right?
Yeah, I mean, GPS is a great technology. I don't know. I mean, it's theoretically, I'll give everyone as theoretically possible. The problem as I see it, as I saw it, as I continue to see it, is the coverage. They'll have to get the symbol rates up, which is going to be a problem, but they're also going to have to get the coverage up, you know. Otherwise, you might on a good day get, you know, 3 minutes of cell tower time a day. And can they afford to mount that many more satellites? And I regularly read articles from astronomers crying bloody murder. You know, you think I don't like Elon. Astronomers really are not particularly happy with what he's done to their profession. So do I think that this is going to come on schedule? Do I think anything Elon has ever said went on schedule? So it's definitely not going to be on schedule, but will it ever happen? Maybe. Probably not, but maybe.
I'm not a big fan of Elon. He's a strange dude and got some strange ideas and yada, yada, yada. But this is not a guy that doesn't get crap done.
Well, but he also blows up a lot of things, keep in mind.
No doubt. I'm not saying this isn't an Elon conversation. This is a technology conversation. And it's interesting that I've looked into some of this stuff, and it almost seems like he's basically made 5G obsolete with a wave of his wand. The 5G infrastructure is humongous to try to put that in place. And while it's in place in the inner city areas, from what I understand a bit, you need a widget every block. His thing is jump the shark, as it were.
I have an answer to that, Jim.
Comment at 2BHC.
Yeah, let's give Ken a chance because, you know, I mean, he's been shut out a lot, and then we'll turn to Ed. So, Ken, you're up.
Yeah, man. I have an hour and 15 minute ride, an hour and a half ride tonight, and out of that hour and a half, three quarters of it would not have connectivity. That's 4G. We only have 4G in Nebraska here in my area. Three quarters of it, I would not have connectivity if it were not for this amplifier. I have a brick amplifier in my car with an external antenna for connectivity. And because of that connectivity, I have three quarters of the way connectivity. Instead of losing three quarters, I regained it. So I shut out a quarter of the way going over a certain area. So that's how rural it is out here. And, I wish we could solve our problems over here, you know, within our own homeland of how we don't have connectivity, you know. So, you know, it just gives you an idea of how ridiculous everything is. And you guys don't have to suffer with that. Everywhere you go with the phone, and it works, right? I drive down the road, and I lose connectivity for a half an hour. Complete blackout. So, you know, that's the story. And that'll probably be my final comment for the night. Just to let you know, out in these rural areas, we really don't have connectivity in some areas. Some people have none. They live in areas where they have none. They have cell phone connectivity, believe it or not. That's how bad it is. So this system would appeal to some people in strange areas out in Wyoming, Nebraska, Kansas, South Dakota, North Dakota, maybe, you know, who knows. Well, he's got them on the hook, and they would pay thousands for their, you know, because they're ranchers and farmers. You have to think about them, you know. Not saying that it's good, and not saying he's going to make money off of them to be able to have a viable income, but they would be looking at that saying, maybe. These are the people that have satellites, and all they have is just satellite, used satellite telephone right now. 73s, guys. I'm arriving at my destination. Back to net control. Back to Roy.
Okay, very good. Ed, you're up next.
I recently attended a professional conference on 5G, and about the only thing I really, really learned about it is the answer to Jim's question. And the reason for like the 20 gigahertz stuff on 5G that won't go through anything, the answer is the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl, as I understand, I'm not a football fan, but I was hearing about it today, it's next Sunday. At the Super Bowl, you have like 100,000 people. And now normally, maybe not the Super Bowl, but normally it's something like that. Half time, everybody takes out their phone. And the idea with 5G is to cater to that. But you know, at the 20 gigahertz, you have the bandwidth to handle 100,000 people turning on their cell phones all at once. Because the beauty is, they're up in the stands in the top, and it's all short range line of sight. Whereas in any kind of an urban area, it's absolutely positively. Does that help?
Okay, I mean, the way that I heard them promoted for years was the bandwidth allowed them to stream high-definition videos on people's cell phones, and I always responded, who the hell wants to watch a high-definition movie on a cell phone?
True, but more importantly, if there's anything between you and the cell tower, you're not going to receive it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem, the benefit and the problem with the new higher frequency bands. The real space loss is greater. The distance between you and your cell tower has to be shorter. I just don't think that he's going to be able to launch as many satellites as he would require to have a consistent a voice mode cell phone. Now, you know, it would be probably worth trillions, and I don't think he could get that kind of money anymore. You know, he's trying to talk Tesla into giving him $30-40 billion just so that he'll promote some kind of artificial intelligence over a Tesla. So I don't know. Again, usually when I bet against Elon, I win the bet. So I'm going to stick with that.
Noise floor and the data rate.
Yeah, technically, yes, but in practical terms, it's also the money, and I think people are kind of losing a little patience with Elon. You know, in the good old days, he could just screw anyone he wanted and get away with it. I think, you know, Teflon Elon is sort of fading away, but we'll see. We'll see what the future brings. That's the nice thing about the future. You never quite know until you get there.
PhD.
Yes, Jim?
So I was trying to nudge the conversation not being about Elon. I mean, it obviously is, but it's more about the technology and the realities that surround it. And whether it's him or, Thomas Edison doing it, the person is irrelevant. It's what's the effect of the mechanical things that they put in place? And it's interesting that we've become enamored of this net that we connect to. I am not. I try my best to stay away from it. It's impossible. But one little switch goes down and the whole thing is down. Ed will tell you about the military concept with electronics, and probably it goes beyond that. I'm familiar with from that perspective of dual redundancy. You don't have any system that you can't shoot a bullet through, and there's a redundant system that takes over or is working in parallel. And there's no redundant system to the internet, but maybe there's one being built. And I'd love to hear your feedback on that.
Hi, Travis. Yeah, let me tell you what I thought.
Yes.
Airlines, planes, air traffic control has a tremendous amount of redundancy. The single biggest problem with the 737 MAX 8 disaster was they had two angle attack indicators and they did not have them configured in a redundant manner. Now, that was just the teeniest tip of a huge iceberg, but that was the tip. But take this one. How much redundancy do they have in the airport computer system? We're periodically hearing about how an airline is completely shut down for hours because of a computer failure without any redundant system. So it's even worse than you're saying, Jim.
I get it. I recognize the fragility of an electronic system, and sometimes it works and sometimes it don't. And you have to have an independent corollary, an independent system that can take over. And if they both rely on electricity, then they're not truly independent either. So it's an interesting conundrum we find ourselves in, relying on these systems, as it were.
AC2GS, let me see if I have the repeater.
I just saw something really off the wall.
Okay, tell us what's off the wall, Ed.
Let me use an example. Now, I may be making a mistake here, so cut me some slack if I embarrass myself. There's a congressman named Dan Crenshaw. I am not talking about his politics. I am talking about his eye patch. There is an example of a redundant system.
Okay, I mean, the human body is full of redundant systems. We have two lungs. We have two major lobes of our liver. We have two kidneys. We have a lot of double things. It's nice to be symmetrical.
Well, I'm just saying, Mr. Crenshaw seems to be basically doing okay. And the loss of stereoscope vision means he can't pretend to be a cheetah and jump out of the trees onto a passing jet spot.
You never know. He's a very capable man. I just want to point out before we close this segment off, because we've kind of eaten into Paul's SpaceNet report, that the Internet came to us via the military. DARPANET was the original thing, and it was built relatively bulletproof, and it has backups on backups on backups. They're not backups to you as the user, so they may not be perceptible. But the chain that your packets go through are healable. If you block a major branch of the Internet, it is designed to go around it until, you know, it has a complete breakdown. So it's sort of pretty much bulletproof, except for when it gets to your home. Then it's your service provider. Your service provider fails, and the Internet fails for you, but it doesn't fail for the world. So I just wanted to put that 2 cents in.
All good points.
Okay, with that, I think we've talked ourselves out. Paul, WS2N, let's bring on the SpaceNet report.
All good, Roy. And this is WS2N for the SpaceNet report. And before I say that, nobody brought up Winter Field Day. I listened around on 40 meters anyway, and I made some contacts, you know, half a dozen CW contacts I had a chance to do earlier today. But very, very busy. I mean, I couldn't believe how many people were on, and so I clicked over to phone, and the same thing there. Again, on 40 meters. I wonder if you noticed that, Roy, on your 10-meter net, was 10 meters crowded with anybody? Or, you know, I was just on 40, and it was booming for Winter Field Day.
Yes, it was rather active. Matter of fact, the very, very first contact I made for the net was a gentleman trying to make a winter field day contact instead. So, yeah, it was busy on 10 as well.
Okay, very good. And they have different classifications that you hear as well. You know, on regular field day, you'll hear like one delta. That would be, you know, somebody at home. Or here they use one H for H for home. And they have a couple of other ones you hear as well. So winter field day, like, you know, if you're outdoors, it's 1-1-0, and mobile, or let's say you're an RV or something, they have a 1M. You know, if you have two stations, of course, it would be 2M. Pretty good. That's something they didn't have years and years ago. So I'm glad they started that. Anyway, let me go on with the SpaceNet report here. Unless somebody has a comment there on with the field day. WS2M.
WV2EG, really, really quick.
Sure, Ed, go ahead.
How many O's were there for people outdoors in the winter? I'll bet very, very few.
I didn't hear any. I was on 40. Maybe if I got on 20, I would have heard more or something, or even 10. But no, you know, and then I only was doing it for about an hour. I didn't have time yesterday, but I did this morning.
Well, I was outdoors most of the day yesterday, and let me tell you, I did not have the manual necessary to do anything with the radio.
Okay, very good. Yeah, it depends on what part of the country you're in, that's for sure. Nothing but rain day after day lately. Okay, this company, Sierra Nevada, they call themselves Sierra Space when they're building space equipment. And that's the same company that's building Dream Chaser, which will be launched in April. Dream Chaser is a cargo vehicle that's going to be going to the International Space Station, about 25% the size of the shuttle. But after docking with the space station, it's going to come back autonomously and land on a runway. And somewhere down the line, they plan on changing changing the design of the cargo vehicle and making a crew vehicle out of it as well. But for now, it's going to be cargo to the space station. They have contracts with NASA. But the same company is also developing a space station for themselves, and it's called LIFE, and that's an acronym for Large Integrated Flexible Environment Space Station. And it's an inflatable space station. I know we've talked about these inflatable things for many, many years on the net, but this one's really under development. It's they just did a final test on a prototype, which apparently it passed, and now they're going to start developing one that will actually be able to go into space. This thing's quite large. It's about, it's going to have like three floors. If you were inside, it would be like three different floors. The diameter is going to be 27 feet in diameter. The walls are probably 8 to 12 inches thick. The walls, you know, when it's inflated, they say it's got quite a few layers. I mean, it looked like 10 or 12 different layers of different material. And when it's inflated, they say it's going to be stronger than steel. So we'll see. One of these units would be about one-third the volume of the International Space Station as it is now. You know, you could put up, you know, three of these things and you could have the equivalent of what the space station has. But they'll be happy with one in the future. They also plan on attaching these things to the reef. The reef is another space station being developed by Blue Origin, and that would be extremely large space station, linear feet, probably 500 feet long or more. And then to the sides of that space station, you would put these inflatable modules in. So they picked up the slack from Bigelow. Bigelow years ago used to talk about this inflatable one that went to the International Space Station. I think it was around 2013. Bigelow made one. It's relatively small. You know, it's got about 400 cubic feet of space. It was a test. They attached it to the one of the nodes, the Harmony node. Tranquility node, one of the ports on the space station. And they were going to leave it there for 2 years, and they were going to disconnect it and let it float off into space. They just wanted to see how it was going to do. It worked out so good, it's still on 2030, you know, the International Space Station. It was supposed to retire many years ago. In fact, it was only designed to go for 15 years, so based on that theory, it should have been deorbited in 2016. Any comments? WS2X.
KD2VHD.
Jim, go ahead.
Please go on, but I hope you address the really interesting moment, the thing of the day, which was what I mentioned earlier. It's incredibly relevant, and I'm really curious to hear what your take is on it. But go on.
What on Elon's connections there? I commented on that before, but do you want to go on further about that, Jim?
Oh, up to you. Up to you. Just share what you know.
Yeah, that was pretty much it. You know, they have succeeded in using two of their over 5,000 satellites to run a quick test. I think it was a 2.5 minute test to see if the text would go back and forth. Naturally, they had to make the cell phone the code to get into the satellite. You know, you couldn't just run out into the street and one of the satellite was going overhead and do it yourself. It was two phones that they had planned on doing. But if that works out, they plan on signing people up, you know, 6 months, maybe a year from now. They need more satellites up there to do that. That's the problem. Right on the cell phones.
Two different hardware.
So it's 50. Each group that goes different engines, on the equator, on the 45, some are, close to 90, not quite, but, close to 90 degrees inclination. And right now, they've got over 5,000 of them up there. He sent over 5,000 up there. Some have already deorbited. Sometimes they don't work. He'll actually deorbit them. So, every week he's sending up two or three more of these things. Each one has, the newer ones, like I said, they're about roughly 25 satellites instead of the 50 that they used to do because they're bigger and heavier. And this isn't the final version. There's going to be another design that they have even bigger, but they won't be going up on a Falcon 9. They'll be going up on a new Starship. The Starship that goes up is going to, carry, maybe, 50 of these things. Of the big ones, they can carry a lot of weight. And they have, they call it a Pez dispenser, the Pez, with little cans that come out. That's what it looks like, The big satellite's going to go up, and this door is going to keep opening up, and more, as the satellites, they're going to get pushed up inside the spacecraft. The Starship, and each, as he releases them, each one's going to come out like a Pez dispenser. So, that's definitely a plan if he could ever get the Starship off the ground, which I'm sure they will. They've got billions of dollars poured into this themselves. They built the whole city down in Texas, in Boca Chica, Texas. What do they call it? Stargate. He named it the place Stargate. I mean, he's out there. But you know, he doesn't do it himself. I think he's got like 12,000 workers involved with all these projects. Back to you, John.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt he doesn't do it himself. That's where it gets interesting. No doubt. But please continue.
Yeah, all these great ideas and everything that that come out of this company, for me to believe that one guy is coming out with all of these, you know, I find that hard to believe. I think he's got terrific minds working for him. And I think those people should be getting a lot more press. But they don't. You know, the only guy that I see get press is him and the... was it the president, that lady, she's been with him since the beginning. But they're the only two I ever see, you know, on the news. You know, they only really want to talk to him, or he's the only one putting the name out there. Anyway, let me continue on a couple more topics, Jim, back to you. Okay, this is WS2N. Japan launched a spacecraft to the moon back in September 8th, and recently it did land on the moon. It's called SLIM, for a smart lander for investigating the moon. SLIM took many months to actually land on the moon. It does go up and around Earth, and each time it goes around, it increases its apogee little by little. And it launched on an H2A, which is a liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen rocket out of Japan. So they launched their own rocket. NASA was involved with it a little bit. I think they had one of the detectives was from NASA. But anyway, this thing successfully did land on the moon. They were trying to do a pinpoint landing. They wanted to get within feet. And they did do it. They did that. They got in within 300 feet. And the deal was, after it landed, it had a solar panel, and it was going to keep transmitting information, everything back to Earth. Unfortunately, they found out over time, it landed, but it wound up landing upside down. The solar panels are located on the top. Well, now they're on the bottom. So they're not picking up any sun. They ran on batteries until, last I heard, the batteries were almost down to nothing. And anyway, within a couple of days, the moon's going to go into lunar nighttime for 14 days, so they don't expect to get, you know, this thing will not recover after a couple of weeks of darkness. They did manage to send a lot of pictures back down. One picture was of the spacecraft itself sitting on the moon. They had these little balls, a little bit bigger than a hard baseball, and these things popped out of the vehicle right before it landed on the moon, and the idea was to take a picture of the spacecraft, and it did that successfully. These little balls transmitted back to the spacecraft. The spacecraft antenna was apparently facing in the right direction, or they moved it in the right direction, and transmitted information directly back to Earth. No relay. So they've got some pictures. In fact, I sent one picture over to Dr. Roy's website. He put it up on a website. One of the actual pictures taken from one of these balls sitting on the moon surface of SLIM. So, it's actually successful. So they've joined four other countries that have successfully landed on the moon. And now Japan has added themselves to that list. Let me drop it.
So, you know, time marches on. We have another one going up from the United States, and that will be going up middle of February. Intuitive Machines is another private company that has built the Nova C lander. It's quite, it looks like quite a large lander. It sits about 8 feet high and about 5 by 5 feet, I guess, going up. So it's a relatively tall one. And this one will be landing on the South Pole. I think they wanted to build it tall because solar panels, when they're up higher, have a better chance of receiving light from the sun. Being on a South Pole, you know, you need to you're only going to get light coming on, you know, off the horizon when you're on the South Pole of the Moon. So we'll see if that spacecraft is going to be able to successfully land on the Moon. This one's going to be launched by Falcon 9 by SpaceX. So hopefully that one will succeed. All right, I don't know if anybody reads the space news, but Ingenuity, we talked about on Annette countless times. Ingenuity was the helicopter that landed on Mars almost 3 years ago now with the Perseverance rover. It's been flying around on Mars ever since. You know, they recharge its battery. It takes off, does a 2-3 minute mission, comes back down, and does this over and over again. Over the last 3 years, it collectively has flown around 14 miles, they said. They were hoping to get 5 flights. They were happy just to get one to make sure it worked. But they said, you know, if we get 5 flights out of this thing, we're going to be happy. And JPL put together some heck of a helicopter. They got 72 flights out of it. I wish it was 73. It would have been easier to remember. But 72 out of Ingenuity. Did a lot of investigations, looking ahead of where the Perseverance rover is going to go, giving the operators better information on what to avoid, you know, and what to look for as the years went by. So their rotor blade, apparently, they believe, hit the ground on the 72nd flight when it came down. And spinning at over 2,000 RPMs, this 4-foot-long rotor, they know a piece of it is gone because they have a picture of taken from the spacecraft, from Ingenuity, looking at the ground.
That time complete.
Looking at the ground on Mars, and they, sure enough, they see a picture of one of the blades and a big chunk of it missing on the end of it, and they make a prediction that if it's spinning at that rate, they're pretty sure the other blade must be missing a piece as well. You know, it's a dual blade system as well. It's got two blades. One spins one way, the other one spins the other way. And you know, they know that thing is not going to fly anymore. It landed upright. Just the cameras, you know, everything still works on board. But it will not be flying anymore. And because of this design, it's helped future missions, especially to Mars. NASA's already planning on sending 2 helicopters to Mars on the next landing on that planet, which would be the sample return. They would have 2 of these, except each one will be much larger than this one. And also, it's helping in the design of Dragonfly. Dragonfly is a mission that's going to be going to the moon Titan. Titan is a moon flying around Saturn. And there's a planned mission eventually to go there. And when Dragon eventually comes down and lands on that moon, it's going to have
8 of these blades, like a gigantic drone, about maybe 12-foot by 12-foot vehicle, and with these big blades in every corner. So it's going to have 8 blades. It'll be able to, after it lands, it'll be able to take off and go to another location. And another location, and you know, maybe they'll get 72 flights out of Dragonfly. Who knows? On a completely different moon, that would really be exciting. But that's under development now, and I'm sure they were encouraged by this little Ingenuity helicopter that's now toast, unfortunately. Any comments? And they did say, but it's a little too far away to get a close-up picture. You know, I'm just wondering if that's possible, to figure out a route and have Perseverance go up close to Ingenuity. I'd like to see them do that. You know, I know Perseverance has its own mission, rides around on, on a daily basis, doing what it's doing. But as an engineer, I'd like to see it go over to the helicopter and take at least a couple of pictures of that before they move on. By the way, Dragonfly, the one that's going to Titan around Saturn, it's going to be powered by an RTG, radioisotope thermoelectric generator, which it's too far away to get from the sun to have solar power. So I did want to mention that as well. Any comments?
Kilo Echo 2 Alpha Juliet Uniform. I'm Charlie. I didn't check in before, but I've been monitoring you all night.
Oh, that's good, Charlie. Nice to hear from you. And, do you have any comments or questions? I'm glad you're listening. I'm sure there's people listening that don't necessarily check in, but are you interested in the space program? We tend to do this at the toward the end of the net. You know that we're here from 8 o'clock until usually around 11 o'clock. Back to you, Charlie. I missed your call. My name is Paul, WS2N.
Thank you for the entertainment. I really enjoy it.
Real good. Okay. All right. We're getting to the close here. But by the way, talking about RTGs, there is a company now working with Strontium 90. They call it. They're gonna use that and try to manufacture RTGs, radioisotope thermoelectric generator out of strontium 90, which it's a little different than what they use. They use plutonium 238, and 238 has a half life of, we used to talk about that on the net too, I think 80 to 85 or 87 years half life, and strontium is a little bit less than that. It's around 20, it's just in that article, it was 27 years half life. But that'll be good, because this stuff is very hard to come by, and there's a whole bunch of strontium 90 around. So I'd like to see that this one company that just got a contract with NASA to start developing to be able to put in these missions that are way too far away from the sun to utilize that solar energy for power. Any comments? Okay, nothing. I will turn it back to Roy in a second. Cygnus is going to be launched. That's a cargo vehicle. Again, now on a Falcon 9 rocket. SpaceX will be launching that from Florida, 39A. To put that Cygnus cargo vehicle attached to the International Space Station in a couple of few days. And this is the first time Cygnus is going up on a SpaceX rocket. SpaceX has their own cargo versions.